Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, August 16th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. Today's mini editorial is written by Leon Koster of Sioux City, and Leon writes, "It was disgusting to read Monday's mini editorial, which compared our DOJ to the Gestapo. The Republican-appointed FBI head did his job. The results of the actions show that the former president was wrong in taking material from the White House. What about law and order?" Again, this was written by Leon Koster of Sioux City. The top story today is from the Sioux City Council meeting last night, and the headline is, "Council takes no action on parking rates." The Sioux City Council did not take any action Monday on a staff proposal to increase rates for municipal parking, ramps, meters, and fines. The current rate for metered parking is 60 cents per 30 minutes and 75 cents per hour. If the council votes in favor of the adjustments, those fees would increase to 80 cents and $1. In our discussions initially, we had a higher rate increase on the monthly parkers. Through discussions with downtown partners, it was kind of discussed that they would rather put more of the onus on the violators than on the parkers, Sioux City Public Works Director Dave Carney told the council. Under the current proposal, parking meter overtime fines would rise from $10 to $14. After 30 days, it would rise from $15 to $21, and after 90 days, from $30 to $42. Other parking-related fines would increase from $35 to $50 after 30 days, from $40 to $55, and after 90 days, from $50 to $70. The last rate increase for street meter fees occurred in 2007, while ramp fees and parking fines were raised in 2019. Mayor Bob Scott said, "I don't see how you can justify a 40% increase on parking meter fines, but a 10% on a monthly parker," Mayor Bob Scott said. "Again, we favor the downtown dramatically. A person who is parking downtown there probably lives somewhere else in town that came down 25 minutes late or 20 minutes late for whatever reason, a doctor's appointment." Scott requested a breakdown of parking fines by category so the council can see how many violators paid after 30 days and after 90 days. He also said he wants to see what the projected revenue would amount to if fines are increased. Carney told the council that back in January, the city's finance department came to him and showed him that after the current fiscal year, the parking fund balance would be negative. "Ideally," said Carney, who noted that the city can no longer get parts for its current parking meters, "ideally, the parking fund should be self-sustaining to fund all the ramp improvements and ramp repairs, and also the maintenance of our meters and our staff." Carney said the city is replacing meters with basic coin meters, not meters that accept credit cards. Councilwoman Julie Shaner wondered if the city could get rid of meters altogether to save money and replace the meters with signs instructing parkers to pay by mobile app, something other cities have done. Many older residents would not understand how to use a parking app or might not even have a smartphone, according to Scott. "Maybe one side of the street is signs and one side of the street is meters. Split it up a little bit," Shaner said. Carney said he didn't think Shaner's suggestion would save the city enough money to forego a rate increase. Sioux City man to stand trial for fatally shooting roommate. Jury selection is scheduled to begin Tuesday in the trial of a Sioux City man accused of fatally shooting his roommate. Robert Buell, 53, has pleaded not guilty in Woodbury County District Court to second-degree murder and going armed with intent for the August 22nd shooting death of Jason Lafferty, 41, at their home at 211 21st Street. Jury selection is expected to last one day. Woodbury County Attorney Patrick Jennings would begin presentation of witness testimony and evidence on Wednesday. The case could be submitted to jurors by the end of the week. Police said Buell and Lafferty got into an argument inside the residence and Lafferty went to the garage. According to court documents, Buell stayed in his upstairs bedroom before getting a 12-gauge shotgun and a 45 caliber handgun and going to the garage. Buell told police he pointed the shotgun at Lafferty and then set it down. Lafferty took the gun, emptied the shells from it, and began reloading it. Buell then pulled the handgun from his coat pocket and fired three shots at Lafferty, striking him twice, court documents said. When police arrived, Lafferty was dead. Detectives found the shotgun, which was empty, and all of the shells on the floor. The handgun and three spent shell casings also were found. Buell's attorney, public defender Billy O'Adair, has filed notice that he will argue Buell was justified in shooting Lafferty because he was protecting himself. If found guilty of second-degree murder, Buell would face a 50-year prison sentence. Going armed with intent carries a 5-year sentence. Sioux City man pleads not guilty on gun charges. A Sioux City man pleaded not guilty Monday of firing shots at a 17-year-old girl during an altercation. Aiden Wabasha, 19, entered his plea in Woodbury County District Court to charges of intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, aggravated assault, and felon in possession of a firearm. According to court documents, the teen was at a friend's house in the 1000 block of 15th Street on June 12th, and they began arguing. Wabasha intervened and threatened her with a gun, holding it inches from her head. The girl left, but returned later to reconcile with her friend. Wabasha then verbally threatened the girl. The girl left and went to Dale Street Park, where she encountered some male friends who escorted her back to her friend's home and got into a fight with Wabasha, who drove away. The girl and her male friends went back to the park, but she returned to her friend's home with one of them later to retrieve belongings. Wabasha exited the home and pointed a gun at them, court documents said. The girl told police that as she and her male friend ran away, they heard two gunshots. Hours later, a Sioux City police officer stopped Wabasha for failure to stop at a stop sign. After Wabasha consented to a search of his vehicle, police found a 9mm handgun inside a bag, and Wabasha admitted it was his. Cone Park tubing season extended into October. Although the pool season is coming to an end, there is still time to try summer tubing at Cone Park at 3400 Line Drive. Session days and times will occur from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Fridays, 12:30 to 3 p.m., 3:15 to 5:45, and 6 to 8:30 p.m. Saturdays, and 12:30 to 3 p.m. and 3:15 to 5:45 on Sundays from now until October 9th. Tickets for Cone Park's tubing series are sold on a first-come, first-served basis. Advance tickets may be purchased by calling 712-279-6126 or online at conesparksiouxcity.com. Siouxland man sought on probation violation. The U.S. Marshal Service North Iowa Fugitive Task Force is seeking the following person. Kerry Phillips, 28. He is 6 feet tall, 130 pounds, and is wanted by the U.S. Marshal Service on a warrant for violating probation. Phillips is on probation for conviction of failing to register as a sex offender. Anyone with information can call 712-252-0211 or email siouxlands.mostwanted@usdoj.gov. We'll now have an overview of the five-day forecast. Today, we'll have times of clouds and of sun, and it'll be a high of 76 and a low tonight of 56. Wednesday will be mostly sunny and humid, with a high of 81 and a low of 56. Thursday will be humid, a stray afternoon thunderstorm, a high of 82 and a low of 59. Friday will be humid with a couple of showers, a high of 77 and a low of 56. And Saturday will be clearing and humid with a high of 76 and a low of 54. Democratic Senate candidate Mike Franken seeks to unify Iowans around his campaign. Iowa voters need to reject partisan politics and gather around a unifying message, Democrat Mike Franken told a crowd Monday at the Iowa State Fair. Franken, who's seeking to topple longtime Republican Senator Chuck Grassley in the November Senate election in Iowa, said he wanted Iowans to put country over party and people over politics and rejuvenate the state's socially progressive roots. He noted Iowa was among the first states to legalize same-sex marriage and implement environmentally conscious agriculture practices, and Iowa universities are among the first to allow women in graduate school. Franken's less than 10-minute speech at the Des Moines Register political soapbox was light on policy and highlighted his background as a Navy admiral and growing up on a family farm around Sioux City. This is the Iowa that leaned forward, and I'm so happy to be in the political party, not to get overtly political, which has a reputation of leaning forward in society, he said. Among the Democratic Party's accomplishments, Franken said, have been women's suffrage, Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. Franken served almost 40 years in the U.S. Navy, reaching the rank of Vice Admiral and directing military operations in Africa, as well as working in congressional affairs. Grassley first won election to the U.S. Senate in 1980, and he's won by at least 20 percentage points in every election since then. Polling shows this election is Grassley's most competitive since being elected. The Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll shows Franken 8 percentage points behind the Republican senator, with 39% of support compared with Grassley's 47%. Without mentioning Grassley by name, Franken noted his absence among the candidates speaking at the soapbox. I wish all candidates would stand up here and have a discussion, he said. And those that don't want a discussion up here, please let's at least have a debate. Franken has challenged Grassley to 4 debates ahead of the November 8th election. Grassley was at the fair on Monday, sharing on Twitter that he visited a prize-winning bull and met with Veterans Affairs members and members of the Iowa National Guard at the Veterans Parade. In an emailed message, Grassley's campaign spokesman Michaela Sunderman derided Franken for his support of President Joe Biden's economic agenda, which she said was hurting middle-class families. Iowans don't need another liberal rubber stamp for the Biden agenda in Washington, D.C., Sunderman said. Chuck Grassley is the inflation fighter. Iowans want to get America and our economy back on the right track. We have a proven leader in Senator Chuck Grassley. The senator we need is the senator we have. Speaking with reporters after his speech, Franken said he would have voted for the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act, and he said the climate provisions made it a seminal moment for the U.S. going forward. We have 240,000 Iowans that are diabetic. This measure gives them budget relief for their health care, he said. This and more is what is in the future of the United States, and it's zero cost to the taxpayer. An estimate from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania found that the Senate-passed version of the bill would reduce the federal deficit by $264 billion over 10 years. It also found that the effect on inflation is statistically indistinguishable from zero, and most of the tax increases in the bill fall on people with higher income. Franken told reporters he was closing in on completing a 99-county tour of the state, a tradition his Republican opponent originated in 1980 and was often dubbed the Full Grassley. In the counties he's visited, Franken said he's seen a sea change in support for his campaign. Things are changing, he said. People want change. They want something less cantankerous, less controversial, less animus. They want to see something to congeal together. They want to renew friendships. They want families to get together again. They don't want this. Democratic 4th District candidate Ryan Melton says conservative policies are hurting the district. Ryan Melton said conservative policies have been hurting Iowa's 4th District, pitching his case to voters in his campaign against Republican Randy Feenstra at the Iowa State Fair. Melton, a Democrat, said he was the one pro-democracy candidate in the race, skewering Feenstra for accepting the endorsement of Donald Trump and what he thought was a lukewarm response to the January 6 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. In my opinion, the acceptance of Donald Trump's endorsement is a rejection of American democracy, he said at the Des Moines Register soapbox on Monday. Melton said he was inspired to run when he saw that no other Democrats were planning to challenge Feenstra in the highly conservative district. Feenstra took office in 2021 after defeating Republican Steve King in the 2020 primary. King had drawn criticism from opponents and fellow Republicans for making inflammatory anti-immigration and white supremacist statements throughout his 18 years in Congress. Melton named several areas of life he thought were worse off under Republican state leadership, including child care, health care, and labor rights. Concerning a high rate of teachers leaving the profession, Melton said teachers in Iowa deserve higher pay and the pattern of villainizing teachers has led some to leave the job. He said schools and teachers need more money and resources to help students who are struggling. We have so many kids going to school hungry. They're going to school dealing with problems at home. They're certainly not going to school often in an ideal learning mindset, he said. So we need teachers that are robustly paid and respected and not overworked so that they can observe these kinds of gaps. Feenstra policy positions align with King's and are bad for the people of the 4th District, Melton contended. Congressman Feenstra's voting record is Steve King's voting record, he said. They are the exact same voting record. The 4th District is the most Republican district in the state, where registered Republicans outnumber Democrats 2-1. Feenstra's 2020 primary election was backed by national Republicans, and he won, in part, by painting King as a liability after he was stripped from his committee positions for comments about white supremacy made in the New York Times. Melton criticized Feenstra for support of the carbon capture pipelines being proposed through Iowa, which Democratic politicians and farm groups alike have opposed. Three companies have proposed different pipelines to move carbon dioxide captured from ethanol deep underground in an attempt to decrease carbon emissions and sequester greenhouse gases, facing bitter opposition from both climate advocates and rural landowners. This month, Summit Carbon Solutions asked the Iowa Utilities Board to grant eminent domain in four Iowa counties to build the pipeline. Melton called carbon sequestration a failed technology and criticized Feenstra for his support for the projects, which he said don't do enough for climate change and are prone to failure. Why would you give the burden of a risk of a carbon capture pipeline leak? Why would you put that burden on us on the ground? Just so corporations can rake in massive profits from that, he said. The Register said it invited all candidates for state and federal office to speak at the soapbox, and Feenstra is not scheduled to speak. The Republican Party of Iowa spokesperson Colin Crompton said, Randy Feenstra is a true Christian conservative who has led on protecting life, liberty, and freedom. Feenstra was one of the first voices to warn about inflation and has fought tooth and nail for Northwest Iowa's farms, small businesses, and families. We'll now move to the sports section, and we'll begin with some sports briefs. The first one, Nebraska volleyball ranked number one by AVCA. The Nebraska volleyball team was ranked number one in the preseason AVCA coaches poll released on Monday. The Huskers collected 1,538 points in the poll and came in ahead of number two Texas, number three Wisconsin, number four Louisville, and number five Minnesota. Nebraska got 24 first place votes, while Texas had the most at 27. Wisconsin received 12 and Louisville had one. It marks Nebraska's 101st week all-time at number one in the AVCA coaches poll, the most of any program in the nation. The last time the Huskers were ranked number one to start a season was prior to the 2016 season. Nebraska was last ranked number one in the AVCA poll on September 16, 2019. Nebraska has now been ranked in all 572 AVCA polls all time and has been ranked in the top 10 a total of 516 times. Both those marks lead the nation. It marks the eighth straight year that Nebraska has been a preseason top five pick. The Huskers went 26-8 last season and made it to the NCAA championship match where they fell 3-2 to Wisconsin. NU ended the year at number two in the poll and returns five starters, including 2021 AVCA All-American Maddie Kubik and Lexi Rodriguez. Transfer middle blocker Caitlin Howard also joined the fold after three AVCA All-American accolades in 4 years at Penn State. NU opens the 2022 season this Saturday with a red-white scrimmage at 6 p.m. at the Bob Devaney Sports Center. Fan day is set for 10 a.m. at the Bob Devaney Sports Center. Then BCU women's soccer second in poll. The University of Jamestown totaled 143 points for first place in the 2022 Great Plains Athletic Conference, or GPAC, preseason women's soccer coaches poll. The Jimmies garnered 11 of 13 first place votes. Jamestown was the GPAC regular season champion in 2021. Briarcliff University was picked second with 133 points and two first place votes. The Chargers won the 2021 GPAC postseason tournament championship and was the regular season runner-up. Hastings was picked third with 108 points. Morningside and Midland round out the top five respectively. Dort was seventh with 80 points, while Northwestern was 10th with 52. The 2022 NAIA Women's Soccer National Championship will be played starting November 29th at the Orange Beach Sportsplex in Orange Beach, Alabama. The opening round will be played November 17 through 19 on campus sites. The GPAC will once again receive two automatic bids to the NAIA postseason in 2022. The 2022 GPAC women's soccer season schedule will consist of 12 league games, as all 13 teams will compete for the conference crown. Presentation College will again play in the GPAC as an affiliate member in men's and women's soccer. Red Raiders lead GPAC men's soccer poll. Northwestern College totaled 116 points for first place in the 2022 Great Plains Athletic Conference GPAC preseason men's soccer coach poll. The Raiders garnered 8 of 12 first place votes. Northwestern was the 2021 GPAC regular season men's soccer champion. Northwestern brings back valuable experience from their 2021 campaign with NAIA All-Americans James Bulger and Marcel Lingert returning to the pitch. Nicholas Fitter is the leading goal scorer among returners with 7. Hastings was picked second with 110 points and three first place votes, while Morningside was picked third with 1 first place vote and 100 points. Briarcliff and Concordia round out the top 5 respectively. In 2021, Northwestern went 10-1 in GPAC play and posted an overall record of 16-4-1. Hastings won the GPAC postseason tournament and was third in the regular season with a record of 8-2-1 and an overall record of 12-5-2. The 2022 NAIA Men's Soccer National Championship will begin November 29th at the Jack Allen Soccer Complex in Decatur, Alabama. Opening rounds will be November 17th through 19th on campus sites. The GPAC will receive 2 automatic bids in the NAIA postseason 2022. MVFC earns 5 in preseason poll. North Dakota State will begin the 2022 football season in familiar territory at number 1 in the AFCA's FCS Coaches Top 25 poll. The Bison won their 9th FCS National Championship in January and earned 24 first place votes. North Dakota State begins defense of their title on September 3rd versus Drake. A quarterfinalist from last season, Montana comes in the second spot, followed by South Dakota State at number 3, who earned the final first place vote. The runner-up from a year ago, Montana State, starts at number 4 with Villanova rounding out the top 5. There is only one top 25 match up in the first full weekend of games, as number 9 Southern Illinois travels to number 14 UIW on September 3rd. The Salukis and Cardinals both reached the second round of the playoffs in 2021. The preseason top 25 teams begin their season a week earlier than everybody else. Number 10 Stephen F. Austin hosts Jacksonville State, and number 23 Mercer hosts Morehead State on August 27th. South Dakota was the first team out of the poll, receiving 49 votes. North Dakota also received 2 votes. We'll now be moving to college football, and our first story is Dort University football prepares to take next step to compete locally, nationally. Sioux Center. The Dort University football team is ready to take the next step. That's what Dort head coach Joel Penner said in the preseason, as his group is looking to take a jump forward and compete with top 5 teams Morningside and Northwestern for a conference and national title. I think there's some mystery around this team. I think this team is incredibly bought in, incredibly unified, and incredibly hungry to take the next step, Penner said. We, I think, have a realistic expectation of what it's going to take. We have been right on the doorstep of some of these big wins that would put us ahead of third place. We've kind of gotten a taste for it, but we haven't been able to close those games out. The challenge of getting out of the third place hole they have found themselves in fairly regularly is the strength of the top 2 programs in the conference, the Mustangs and the Red Raiders. Last year, the defenders had to face Morningside and Northwestern in back-to-back weeks, both on the road. Dort hung in with Morningside, falling late 34-28, but could not repeat the act the following week, losing to Northwestern 63-28. This season, there is a month of games between having to play the number 1 and the number 3 teams in the nation. I love that we're going to play 2, 3, 4 playoff games every regular season. Playoff caliber programs, Penner said. Knowing that, I think, just gives us so much confidence that when the opportunity comes for us to be in the postseason again, we are sharpened. We are ready. I love that we sharpen one another the way that and that we do well in the playoffs, because I think it speaks to the quality of this league and the teams that are in it. This year's group returns several student athletes on the offensive side of the ball. Last season's running back by committee allowed a lot of young guys to step in and play at the position, and most of the runners returned. Anthony Trohan, Josh Bush, Nick Rellin, and Ethan Thomas each ran the ball for over 20 times for over 150 yards last season and return at the position again this year. Trohan is a top returner with 774 yards and 12 touchdowns on the ground this year. I think it allows us to expand their role when they're veterans because they know the offense now. They know what they're doing, Penner said. They know what the purpose of their role is each play, and so we're able to do more and more things. It also allows us to specialize guys a little bit. We do different things with our backs that kind of fit their skill sets, and so having a full stable is a really a good thing. They also split their quarterback reps between Tyler Reynolds and Cade McDaniel. Both quarterbacks were asked to run a lot last season as well. Reynolds graduated, but McDaniel and Aiden Platton are in a position battle for the top spot on the depth chart. Our quarterbacks are asked to run. They will take some hits, and so we're big on having multiple guys ready to go, Penner said. It shouldn't ever feel like the backup quarterback is in, and that's what I'm kind of going for, is the next guy in. It's not our backup, it's just another quarterback, much like you would feel with a running back group. The defenders will have to replace the production of top receiver Levi Jungling this season. Jungling's 974 yards and 59 catches with 9 touchdowns are all twice as much as anyone else on the team a year ago. Penner said they will not try to replace the person, as it would be hard to replace Jungling with one guy, but they are looking to replace the production he had, even if it takes multiple guys to do so. On the other side of the ball, the defenders have a young group of linebackers, but a lot of them have experience playing in prior years that will help the transition. They return a full defensive line who are looking to get back to 2020 form, when Dort was the top team in the country in quarterback sacks. The biggest question mark for Penner and his coaching staff is at cornerback. They are replacing some veterans who played a majority of snaps before this season. We've got some younger corners that we're very excited about, but they just haven't had the opportunity yet because they were behind a really good player, Penner said. So far in training camp, one-on-one sessions have been lively. On one side of our corner situation, there's going to be youth, and on the other side, there's going to be a guy who's probably been waiting his turn, and both are exciting players. The defenders have goals posted throughout their facility that players see daily. Those goals, winning the conference and competing for a national championship, but they aren't talked about nearly as much. The team knows what they want to achieve, Penner said, so the coaching staff focuses on each day and how to improve before each game. We have goals as a program for sure, Penner said. We've got them posted and they see them every day. And those goals that involve winning the GPAC, winning playoff games, all the way up to national championship, those are certainly present in our program. I say that our focus is so much on the here and now that I almost need to mention it once, and then they see it every day. We just focus on our purpose. We're working so hard on what this is all about, and I think we're much more focused on the process than we are on the big picture, Penner continued. We'll now move to a business story with the headline of Dollar General Faces OSHA Penalties. Dollar General faces nearly $1.3 million in penalties after government inspectors visited 3 of the chain stores in Georgia earlier this year and found worker safety violations. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, said its inspectors found obstructed exit routes, boxes of merchandise stacked unsafely, and electrical panels that were hard to access. It said those were violations often cited at Dollar General locations. Since 2017, OSHA has proposed more than $6.5 million in penalties after 78 inspections at Dollar General locations nationwide, including more than $450,000 in penalties as a result of the 3 inspections in Georgia. The agency said its inspectors frequently find unsafe conditions that put workers at risk and that could lead to disaster for employees and customers in an emergency. Doug Parker, OSHA's Assistant Secretary of Occupational Safety and Health, said, Dollar General continues to demonstrate a willful pattern of ignoring hazardous working conditions and a disregard for the well-being of its employees. Despite similar citations and sizable penalties and more than 70 inspections, the company refuses to change its business practices. In response, Dollar General said that following the Georgia inspections, it took immediate action to address issues and reiterated its safety expectation from store teams. The safety of our employees and customers is of paramount importance to us, and we will continue to work cooperatively with OSHA, said the company based in Goodlettsville, Tennessee. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, August 16th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Normally we would have obituaries at this time, but there are none in today's paper. So we'll now move into some other stories. Our first one is ISU Extension Summer Camps Give Kids a Chance to Broaden Their Horizon. Houston, we have a problem. Or should we say there was a mechanical issue impeding the launch of Cole Sales Rocket? Don't worry about it, buddy, Nathan Primrose said, reconnecting the PVC piping that was being used as a launcher for Cole's do-it-yourself cardboard spaceship. This is an easy fix. Now stomp on the pop bottle and watch your rocket fly. Wait, cardboard spacecraft, PVC launch pads, and propulsion by plastic pop bottle? Guess we're not talking about NASA here, right? Actually, Cole, 9, was one of the participants at a special one-day astro camp in Sioux City, sponsored by Woodbury County's Iowa State Extension and Outreach. Primrose, an Iowa State University student, was helping wannabe astronauts, grade 3 through 5, build moon rovers, prepare space-age ice cream, and learn the science behind stomp rocket technology. Simply put, stomp rocket technology consists of stomping on a plastic bottle that is attached to one end of the PVC. This causes the air inside the bottle to be compressed. The compressed air escapes down the pipe and into the body of Cole's rocket, located on the other end of the pipe. The rocket effectively closes off the pipe's air supply, causing the rocket to fly off the launcher and into outer space. Well, outer space might be an overstatement. Cole's spacecraft crash landed on the other side of the parking lot. This is so cool, he said. My rocket landed on the roof of somebody's car. Youth Outreach Coordinator Christine Craig-Byering couldn't help but smile at the enthusiasm of the astro campers. The kids are expanding their horizons while having a great time doing it, she said. Each summer, ISU Extension and Outreach offers a wide selection of 1 to 2 day camps. Utilizing research-based curriculum delivered by experienced 4-H youth development and extension staff, the educational camps give kids hands-on training in science, cooking, and even earning certification to become a babysitter. Our camps allow kids to keep learning even when school isn't in session, Craig Bayer-Rink said. However, don't tell Emmett Rolina that there is an educational component to stomp rocket technology. The 9-year-old simply enjoyed seeing his spaceship fly high into the sky. That was fun, he said with a laugh. I want to do it again. A few days earlier, Emmett's 12-year-old sister Harper Rolina was enrolled in a fashion on a budget runway style summer camp. Geared toward 4th through 8th graders, this camp challenges kids to buy an entire outfit for just $15. The campers needed to be creative with their designs, accessories, and jewelry while being mindful of a tight budget, Craig Byerink explained. Having said that, $15 can go a long way while shopping at Sioux City's Goodwills, the Bargain Center, and the Gospel Mission thrift stores. In fact, Harper Relina had money left over after assembling her ensemble, which included a baggy top, cargo pants and belt, a bucket hat, and a pocketbook. I call my look Grandpa Chic, she said, while turning around on a runway during an impromptu fashion show. Maggie Bowley went with a haute couture look. Walking the runway with a flowered dress, a fashionable bracelet and necklace combination, as well as a pair of baby blue pumps, the 11-year-old struck a pose with wardrobe that cost $15 on the nose. Maggie knows a lot about clothes and a lot about spending money, Mom, Jennifer Browley said with a grin. Those are two of our favorite things in the world. Perhaps Maggie Bowerly can give some pointers to Craig Berenick, who admitted she knew more about stomp rockets than she did about fashion. The fun thing about our summer camps is that there is literally something for everybody. The kids may not become astronauts or fashion designers, but hopefully the camps will spark their interest to try something new and different. At 85, Ray Ward, founder of Ward Laboratory, is the Tom Osborne of soil. As Ward Laboratory marks its 40th anniversary this week, people in agriculture are calling Ray Ward, the company's founder, the prophet of soil testing. Ray loves to teach and does an excellent job explaining the science of soil fertility, Kearney crop consultant Mark Kottmeyer said. His presentations have informed and influenced countless producers, crop consultants, and agriculturalists across the United States. He brought a tool to farmers, added Keith Stanford, a crop and livestock producer from Kearney. Ward and his wife Jolene arrived in Kearney in 1982. It was a dark time in agriculture as high interest rates, weak commodity markets, and other factors knocked the farm economy to its knees. Ward's dream was to put his knowledge of soil health and fertility to work for farmers, but he faced a number of challenges. One was convincing farmers the value and necessity of testing their soil. Some of what he told them flew in the face of conventional knowledge. Producers were being advised to add extra nitrogen to their fields to ensure high yields, but Ward warned them to back off. He told farmers that testing would show them their soil had residual fertilizer, so it was possible to apply less fertilizer. Doing so improved yields, reined in costs, and helped reduce unhealthy nitrates in groundwater and streams. Ward spread his message about soil testing at multiple levels. He talked about soil testing on the radio. He served on the board of the Central Nebraska Natural Resources District. He became a sought-after speaker in the Midwest, in the United States, and overseas. He also taught agronomy class at the University of Nebraska at Kearney. Our relationship goes back at least 30 years, said Charles Bekak, the senior vice chancellor for academic and student affairs at UNK. Bekak's advanced degrees are in plant science and range management. He said Ward's statue as a soil testing expert is well known. It goes to his fine relationship with so many growers and producers in the area. Those who have worked closely with Ward said it's easy for audiences to see he is so knowledgeable. His low-key, humble style makes it easy for listeners to absorb Ward's complex topics. Ray was able to start at the level of the producers. How he spoke seemed so natural to them, and when he finished speaking, they discovered, "Hey, I just learned something," said Jim Shepherds, a USDA ag researcher in Lincoln. Shepherds grew up in Shelton and managed a large federal ag research facility in the area. He said he was around when Way and Jolene decided to expand Ward Labs from a three-car garage into a larger building. It was a challenging period in agriculture. The Wards were also challenged. They both worked long hours during growing the company. Jolene held down the office and Ray expanded his role to include a focus on the business side of things. Ward Labs had developed a reputation for timely and accurate testing, and volume was growing by the thousands per month. Ray was very gracious with his time, but now and then he would try to help too much, Shepherd said. Retired banker Ron Bielenberg wrote the loan for the Ward's first lab. It probably wasn't the best time to start a business, but he had a good plan and he understood the business and they both worked hard. Bielenberg said the Ward's also contributed to the community through their membership in organizations and work on special events. Ray chaired the Chamber's annual Gateway Farm Expo for several years and served on the board of the Regents NRD board. Kottmeyer, the consultant who owns Central States Agronomics, said Ray Ward was a conduit for new customers. As farmers embraced a more scientific approach to agriculture, they sought out more knowledge, which was good for consultants. There are times when I have questions about soil fertility, and there's no one who is more knowledgeable than Ray Ward. He is in it for the farmer. That's where his information flows. Stafford said the technical knowledge possessed by people like Ward and Kottmeyer has contributed greatly to the success of agriculture. Yields have continually improved, Stafford said. I've always said that growing is easy with the technology we have. Kottmeyer said it was fortunate for Nebraska farmers that Ward Labs arrived in Kearney during the farm crisis of the 1980s. It was a tough time in agriculture, and we were doing everything we could just to get through to the next year. Basically, in tough times, soil testing is even more important than in good times because you're trying to control costs and maximize yields. Steve Mercer of Double M Farms near Kearney said Ward's message was to use just enough fertilizer is especially important this year. Costs of fertilizer have tripled along with the costs of other inputs, so watching expenses could determine if this is a year for profits or losses. We farmers were a little apprehensive at first, but soil testing is showing we can make a drastic difference, Mercer said. He said testing also helps farmers improve their stewardship after it was discovered that excess fertilizer was leaching into groundwater, creating a dangerous health threat. Nitrate concentrations were 4 times the federal limit. Led by the state's network of NRDs, farmers tested water and soil so they would avoid over-fertilizing. Mercer said the results have been positive. We have been able to reduce that nitrate level. We're gradually reducing it. Multiple people encouraged Ward to establish a lab in Nebraska, including Kottmeyer. He said he was surprised when Ward told him he was ready to move to Nebraska, but he wanted to locate in Hastings. He said he was going to put it in Hastings, but Kearney contractor Jerry Schmidt and I convinced him to come to Kearney, Kottmeyer said. Ward Laboratories is the granddaddy among the nation's soil testing labs. And in agriculture, Ray Ward's name is about as famous as Tom Osborne's. Mercy One to partner with Crittenden Center on Child Care. Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center has formed a not-for-profit partnership with the Crittenden Center to provide child care to Mercy employees. Mercy One Kids Campus will open Monday at an off-site location. The new child care center will provide care for 60 kids ages 0 to 5, Monday through Friday. We are so excited to begin offering this great opportunity for our colleagues, said Leah Greathouse, Mercy One Western Iowa Vice President of Mission, Marketing and Support Services. Child care is a huge need for many families, including our own colleagues, and finding a place that is safe and affordable can be a challenge. That's why it's important for us to offer this benefit to our colleagues at an extremely competitive rate for the market. It's something they've been asking for, and we are proud to now offer. Mercy One employee Cara Garcia said she wanted her child to be part of the kids' campus because of the convenience it provides. Finding child care that provides coverage for over 12 hours and on a rotating schedule is very difficult. It was one of the most stressful parts about my paternity leave. Mercy One's new child care provides that coverage at a lower rate than my husband and I found anywhere else. The staff are certified, the ratios of children to caregiver are low, and there's a brand new play area outside. We are so excited for our son to be part of this great opportunity. The center has certified teachers and teachers' aides who are required to take a minimum of 6 hours of training per year. They are also all trained in mandatory reporter, CPR, first aid, AED, and early childhood essentials. When the opportunity came up, Crittenden Center officials knew they wanted to be part of it, Child Development Director Erica Fuente said. We have always counted it as a blessing to partner with businesses to better serve the community, she said. So it made sense we come together with Mercy One to care for the little ones of the people caring for Siouxland. We know the value of providing high-quality, early care environment so parents can know their children are safe and being cared for. I'll now move to the Week in Iowa in Review, which is a recap of news across the state from the past 7 days. Reynolds seeks to bring back 6-week abortion ban. Governor Kim Reynolds filed a court challenge to a 2019 injunction on a 6-week abortion ban this week, an action she announced she would pursue. The court decision invalidated a 2018 law banning abortions once cardiac activity is detected in a fetus, usually around 6 weeks, often before a woman knows she's pregnant. In light of recent decisions at the state and federal level eroding constitutional protections for abortion, Reynolds is asking the court to allow the law, which is still on the books despite being blocked, to go into effect. Abortion is legal up to 20 weeks in Iowa as of now. Planned Parenthood and American Civil Liberties Union have said they will fight the challenge in court. The groups dropped their court challenge of a 24-hour waiting period for an abortion in the state last week and said they would focus their attention on fighting the 6-week abortion ban. And then the Democrat candidate for governor, Deidre DeGeer, said in response to Reynolds seeking this ban, that she said, Our main differences on reproductive health is that I will be a governor who supports the will of the people. A majority of Iowans are pro-choice, and I stand with them. And our next one is the Iowa State Fair kicks off. It kicked off on Thursday, complete with new foods, old traditions, musical guests, and politicians. Agriculture and livestock displays began on Thursday, and spectacles from twin contests to Irish dancing went through the weekend. Candidates seeking state and federal offices gave their pitches to Iowans at the Des Moines Register's annual soapbox. Odds and ends. Wednesday marked 2 years since the 2020 derecho. The storm swept across the state, downing trees, causing billions of dollars in damage to homes and leveling crops. 2 years later, the effects of the storm are still being reckoned with, from hundreds of unanswered insurance complaints to lagging federal disaster funds for county governments. Michigan State Senator headlines Wingding. A Michigan State Senator seen as a rising star in the party headlined the Iowa Democratic Wingding, an annual fundraiser held by seven county parties. Mallory McMorrow's speech earlier this year went viral when she responded to accusations that she was grooming children. McMorrow said Democrats are feeling deflated right now around the country, and she hopes to energize Democrats in the state. COVID-19 cases dip, hospitalizations up. COVID-19 cases in Iowa fell while hospitalizations rose for the second straight week in the week ending on Wednesday. 5,660 new COVID-19 cases were reported compared to 5,768 the previous week. Over that time, 323 patients were in the hospital with COVID-19, up from 309 patients the week before. New broadband map in challenge period. Iowa officials and broadband experts urged Iowans to check the accuracy of a new map that is designed to show where high-speed internet is available in the state. Officials said people can find their address on the map and make sure the speeds reported match the speeds available to them to ensure future state and federal grants go to the right places. GOP celebrates Iowa status and party nomination. National Republican Party Chairwoman Rona McDaniel said she always intended to keep Iowa first in the party's presidential nominating calendar at a state party fundraiser. McDaniel put Iowa GOP Chair Jeff Kaufman in charge of the national committee that determined the order in which states expressed their preference for president in 2024. The committee earlier this year decided to keep the traditional order in place. National Democrats are considering whether to remove Iowa from the position it's held every 4 years since 1972 as they pursue rules changes to their nominating calendar. The party's Rules Committee will meet in November to determine the calendar for future Democratic presidential primaries. Going the distance in Dyersville. Dyersville hosted minor and major league baseball games on the Field of Dreams movie site and received a grant to develop the site this week. The Chicago Cubs beat the Cincinnati Reds 4-2 in the second MLB game at the site on Thursday. The state also announced it would grant the city $12.5 million through Destination Iowa toward a stadium on the Field of Dreams movie site. The grant is 25% of the $50 million cost of the project, which will gather the rest of the funding from local and private investments. The stadium is part of a larger $80 million baseball and entertainment complex planned by Go the Distance Baseball, LLC, which owns the site. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem releases social study standards burnishing U.S. history. South Dakota Kristi Noem, Governor, on Monday, released a revised proposal for social studies standards in public schools that lays out a mostly shining vision of American history after an initial draft of the standards came under heavy criticism last year from conservatives and Native American educators. The Republican governor claimed the new proposed standards are free from political agendas and include an increased focus on Native American history, but they received swift criticism from some educators as a thinly veiled political document. They emphasized the qualities of America's founders and mimic language Noem has used as she jumped on the conservative cause of weeding certain divisive teachings on race from public schools. The 15-member standards work group, selected partially by the governor, included Noem's chief of staff, two Republican lawmakers, and director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference, but just three educators certified by the Department of Education. The group's work was facilitated by William Morrissey, a former professor at Hillsdale College, a conservative institution in Michigan that has tried to remake education across the country. South Dakota's children deserve the very best social studies education in the nation, Noam said in a statement. These standards raise the bar for the breadth and depth of civics and history education. They feature a true, honest, and balanced approach to American history that is not influenced by the political agendas. Noam, who is seen as a potential 2024 White House contender, has also advocated for the 1776 pledge to save our schools as part of a conservative drive to emphasize the qualities of the founders of the United States. The social studies standards, which provide a list of topics students should comprehend at each K-12 grade level, are widely followed by school districts but are not mandatory. The new 128-page document more than doubles the length of the proposed standards the Department of Education released last year. They would make the sprawling argument that the United States, though not without fault, is an exceptional nation that has uniquely advanced rights for every race and gender. They are also peppered with Christian history and explore the religion's influence on the nation's leading figures on Western civilization. For example, 7th grade students are expected to explain how the nation's founders advanced equal rights for every person and advanced the idea that each person is endowed with these rights by the God that created them, and that the existence of human slavery was understood by most, but not all, of the founders to be a contradiction of the principle of human equality. 7th graders are also to be taught patriotism is the love of country, meaning that one holds his or her country up to an objective standard of moral right and wrong, preserving the ways in which the country does good and correcting the ways it does something wrong. The standards state that they are intended in part to foster a love of country that, like any love, is not blind to faults. Nick Tilson, the president of an indigenous advocacy organization called DN Collective, said that when the standards start out with goals like that, they are bound to further a narrative that continues to treat minority groups unjustly. Her approach in this curriculum further perpetuates ignorance, further perpetuates racism and white supremacy, he said, adding these priority areas are dominated by nationalism. The proposed standards are the Noam's administration's second attempt to update the learning objectives. Both the political left and right criticized last year's standard-setting process and led Noam to scrap that proposal and relaunch the process. Noam's new version, released Monday, appeased conservative critics. Republican State Representative Sue Peterson, who resigned in protest from last year's work group, praised the new standards in a statement released by the governor's office. She called them substantial and straightforward standards that emphasize our founding documents, our pursuit of freedom, and treat our nation's history honestly. Noam's office also attempted to head off criticism from Native American education advocates and included a statement from Joe Circlebear, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe who was part of the work group. Governor Noam promised to tell our story as part of American history, and these standards do that, Circlebear said in a statement. The new standards ask schools to teach students about the removal and relocation of the Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota, major battles and massacres in their history, the effects of forced boarding schools on Native Americans, as well as indigenous leaders such as Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, and Spotted Tail. It also covers the civil rights movement and its leading figures such as Rosa Parks and Malcolm X. But Native American educators who protested after Department of Education last year cut references to indigenous culture and history from a draft the work group submitted for final approval, said the new standards continued to push indigenous history and culture to the periphery. They are not inclusive, to say the least. The goal was to get away from inclusivity to push an agenda that the governor deems important, said Sarah White, who directs the South Dakota Education Equity Coalition. It's definitely going to further disenfranchise our students when it's missing that indigenous lens. We'll now move to Dear Abby. Dear Abby, my boyfriend of 7 years is very competitive. There is constantly this underlying contest about whose kid is better, whose dog is better, etc. It's silly. They are both great kids and dogs in their individual ways, and I suspect he likes to brag about his 11-year-old daughter just to publicize that she's great. He often criticizes my son. He also has house rules for us that he doesn't hold himself or his daughter to, and becomes upset if I bring it up. I like doing things with him and with his daughter, but not when they're together because it's always them against us. She also hangs on him constantly and whines when I'm around. I realize I can't change how he acts, but I feel like I constantly need to prove myself to him and stick up for my son. Sometimes I'm a little jealous because he treats his daughter so differently than he treats us. I don't want to feel this way. Can you help me come up with a different way of reacting to it? Signed, Weary in Wisconsin. And Abby responds, frankly, your question. Can you come up with a different way of reacting to the way your boyfriend treats you and your son surprised me? The traits you have described are obnoxious. I find it hard to believe that for 7 years you have tolerated the double standard he exhibits and his constant criticism of your son, who by now probably thinks there's something wrong with himself because of it. Put your foot down, better late than never. Insists that he stop criticizing your boy and displaying the double standard if he doesn't comply, for both your sakes and the relationship. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, August 16. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.